On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Minute past the hour, and we begin this Thorn in the Side Thursday edition of The Horn, the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid. Conversation radio is what we call it. If you are new to the process, tell your friends, tell your neighbors. This is something entirely different and has been for nearly 6 years now. Longer than that, really, but we're just counting the internet years. Nearly 6 years now. We will celebrate our sixth birthday, all shiny and ready to go off to first grade, like Texas Betsy noted the other night. We'll celebrate our sixth birthday on Wednesday next. It actually falls on Monday, but I reiterate a little programming note. I will not be behind the microphone Monday because the Environmental Protection Agency is coming to town, and that requires my presence down in the Kanawha Valley. And so that's where I will, in fact, be. Tuesday night, we have another of the, in the magnificent series of PRISM, P-R-I-S-M, PRISM West Virginia American History Chats. This one to be led by Professor Keith Lilly and focusing largely on the early 19th century. It should be, I tell you, a dandy. Now, it will begin not at our regular starting time of 6 p.m. It will begin at 7 p.m. and will be available both on the Horn stream and on the Horn's Ustream channel. If you merely, you'll be able to see it if you just go to headonradionetwork.com. There's a little sidebar window box there where you can watch it live. Okie doke. Yeah, very, very cool. Very informative. You will learn things you did not know. You will be able to counter the weird ravings of teabaggers when they try to tell you all about when George Washington crossed the Mississippi River to explore the Louisiana Territory with Lewis and Clark in a free market fashion, libertarianly, without no federal government interference. You'll be able to look at him and go, God almighty, you're crazier than you look. And you look pretty crazy with your stupid little hat and your little tea bags hanging off there and your chin a-dribbling saliva and walking on your knuckles, you damn teabagger, you. So I strongly suggest that you tune in. And then we will have our little sixth birthday party come Wednesday. Okie doke. Sounds good to me. I mean, I like the idea. Thanks to those of you who have been kicking into the kitty, contribution-wise. We still need a lot more. Basically what it boils down to is we look for 250 folks to kick in 10 bucks apiece over the course of any given month. We call them the Thrifty 250 because this is the cheapest radio program on the planet, rolling in at something less than 5 cents per hour. Over the course of any given month. Nickel, 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 that's a lot, as the old Pepsi saying used to go. Slogan, jingle, whatever. But just those genial reminders. Now, of course, we call this Thorn in the Side Thursday because of the suggestion of our good buddy Horst over in the Far East. And it seems to fit. We are down one thorn in the side, or at least the U.S. government is. Muammar Gaddafi has apparently gone off pining for the fjords or perhaps playing chess with Generalissimo Francisco Franco, who is still dead. What does that mean? Well, it means that turmoil and chaos is in the cards for the immediate future of the Libyan people. And how they get themselves the government is, I hope, their business and not ours. Sadly, the United States will almost assuredly try to make it our business. It would be nice, I'm sure. Well, you know how it is with us and foreign governments. We prefer our foreign government allies, right-wing, compliant, militaristic, dictatorships, who will open their doors to American capitalism, so that American capitalists can do to foreign countries more and worse than what they do to the American people themselves. Because that's how the whole dodge works. But there is apparently celebration in Libya this evening, and I say let them enjoy it while it lasts. Because actually this is where the hard work begins. And I hope they have the starch and the stomach to stand up to the profiteers and the they-want-it-all crowd, especially with regard to their natural resources, when the global transnational corporations come to do everything in their power to take it away from them and keep them permanently impoverished. Well, damn, I'm just a little ray of sunshine this evening, aren't I? Yeah. Now, since Monday, both Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, we have found a way. Monday, it was endangered culture, an endangered culture on the coast of southeast Georgia. Tuesday, it was an ancient native burial ground slated for burial in its own right in tons upon tons of consumer culture garbage. Last night? What was it last night? What was the They Want It All segment for last night? Usually I hang on to these things, but it's escaped me. I know we had one. And tonight we have They Want It All Part 4, Thorn in the Side Thursday. My thanks go out to our pal Cindy up in the Great Northwest for sending this along. You know, I mentioned that while I was down in southeast Georgia last week, I had occasion to be in the presence of some truly ancient live oaks, their branches festooned with Spanish moss, filtering the warm mid-autumn sunlight, filtering through them. Filtering the filtering light, yes, precisely. And when you get around trees like that, and I'm not talking about scrubby-ass pulp pines that are planted by paper companies that grow up like asparagus and you can just about harvest them every year. I'm talking about live oaks that three people can't get their arms around, that are such a magnificent manifestation of life itself, though it be life that perhaps we are not fully able to comprehend, but life just the same, that you have to, if you've got any kind of a conscience, have some degree of reverence for. You know when you're standing in the presence of those things that you are standing in the presence of something profound. Just as when you look in the eyes of one of those thousand-year-old sea turtles, you know that you are looking at something profound, just because we can't necessarily comprehend what they process doesn't mean that they don't process. Our perceptions are not theirs, and theirs are certainly not ours. But I was moved to be around those trees. Dang it, I guess I am a tree hugger. Because, well, shh, there's nobody but us. So don't tell. I hugged one of the live oak trees. I couldn't help it. I just wanted to be hugged. Just wrapped my arms around it as far as I could and just tried, yes. And it felt so good. You got to try it sometime, tree hugging. It did. It felt really, really good. It was pleasant. I could see how to sit with one's back to it, a good book in hand, would be some sort of nature's own energy volume, you know? It just takes you to a peaceful place. And so when I got this story in my email last night from Cindy, I did one of those, cobblers. And I had one of those little moments. Because it seems like, you know, sometimes maybe it's just the way our minds focus that these things pop up again and again and again. Another case of they want it all. You know, Northern California does not have a surfeit or even a surplus of magnificent thousand-year-old redwood trees. They're not just a swimming in them, so to speak. But on the remote north coast of California, fog-shrouded, as Associated Press writer Terrence Che notes, there are some magnificent forests. Brilliant forests, beautiful forests. Forests of profound value that can't even be measured, oddly enough, by dollars. Although there are those who are certainly trying. This time it's not condos. This time it's not a golf course. This time it's not a taco hell. This time it's not a garbage dump. No, there is always, 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 however, something that the money people want with places that are beautiful and unspoiled. And I in the past have said that, you know, frankly, I don't give a damn about a planet that's run by a sentient race of 6 foot tall cockroaches. Absent humans, I see no purpose. You know, I am a pro-human bigot. But there is an element within that that says that humans need wild places. Lord knows John Muir was a proponent of that idea. He once asked President Theodore Roosevelt, "When are you going to stop with this juvenile business of conservation and get serious and talk about preservation?" Because every last place on the planet is not just another place for generating some obscene profit. And bear in mind that the people who want this forest, who want to cut it down with all of these magnificent redwood trees, it is a craft that speaks to me. I like things that come from the earth and agriculture and taking a growing thing and turning it into a manifestation of craft and art. Whether it's barley water and yeast and some hops that becomes a magnificent beer, or the distiller's art, turning beautiful calcium-rich limestone-filtered water in the bluegrass of Kentucky into magnificent bourbon sour mash whiskey, or the stuff that the Scots and the Irish do, or even that stuff that you can clean needles with that passes for vodka. These are arts. And winemakers, too. Viniculture is one of the oldest practiced arts on the planet. But I really got bent out of shape when I read this one. The headline from the Associated Press says, "Environmentalists fight spread of vineyards to California coastal forests." Yeah, really. The dateline is Annapolis, California. In the fog-shrouded forests of California's remote north coast.
Na 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 na.
Winemakers believe they've found the perfect terrain to grow the notoriously fickle Pinot Noir grape, prized by connoisseurs. Vineyard developers are snapping up thousands of acres of redwoods and firs in Sonoma County, with plans to clear the trees and plant the once obscure varietal made famous by the wine-fueled road trip film Sideways. Well, that certainly is a foreshortening of the whole purpose of that film. That was not a wine-fueled road trip film. That was a rather somber commentary on the nature of addiction. Or maybe I just watched it funny. Environmentalists and residents in Annapolis, a tiny town about 140 miles north of San Francisco, are trying to rein in the Pinot lovers. They're fighting the conversion of timberlands into vineyards, which they say destroys wildlife habitat, erodes the soil, contaminates the water with pesticides, and opens the door to development. Wine growers, you see, in California are trying to bust out of their traditional Napa Valley environs. Increasingly, developers are buying up land in remote, ecologically fragile areas such as northwest Sonoma County, where roads and electricity are available and land is relatively affordable. Many property owners here are eager to turn their forests into vineyards because wine grapes, especially for high-end Pinot Noir, are worth more than timber, which is increasingly expensive to harvest due to stringent regulations. Yeah, but hell, it may be expensive to harvest due to the stringent regulations, but, you know, we've got a little experience back here in Appalachia. On the other hand, you can just chop it all down and say to hell with it. No. They want it all. County Supervisor Mike Riley said there are plenty of places to plant grapes in Sonoma County without cutting down redwood forests. I think people have a special feeling for the redwood forests here, and they don't want to see them taken away. Well, hell, they can look up a redwood tree on the interweb net tubes. Who the hell needs more redwood trees? I mean, they take for damn near ever to grow the things. 1,000 years. Imagine that, just 1,000 years sitting around the land doing nothing, not making no money for nobody. That land's been sitting there with them redwood trees on it for 1,000 years, not doing nothing, I tell you, nothing. When it could have been generating a profit. News Ninja Susan noting old growth fir. Bob, it makes you want to pray, doesn't it? To the trees, if nothing else. Yeah, it does. And you get around these things, and suddenly you see how it was that perhaps the ancient people who occasionally ate each other, buried each other in bogs, painted their faces blue, and braided their hair with tar. Celts. Could find those groves to be sacred. They cut down those forests, and they're going to open up a Pandora's box of problems. Yeah, pesticides. Yeah, habitat loss for animals. I don't get real misty-eyed about deer, frankly. They're rats with antlers. Wait till a herd of the little bastards eat your garden, and then see if you don't feel the same way. But those trees, do any little children going to school still learn Joyce Kilmer's famous poem? It was terribly easy to memorize. And I think that's one of the reasons that it was presented to us when we were little. It speaks to something that little kids can get their heads around. And puts an idea in mind that there are just things that are damn special all by themselves. Joyce Kilmer wrote this poem. I believe, wasn't Joyce Kilmer killed in the First World War? 1886 to 1918. I think that I shall never see a poem lovely as a tree. A tree whose hungry mouth is pressed against sweet earth's flowing breast. A tree that looks at God all day and lifts her leafy arms to pray. A tree that may in summer wear a nest of robins in her hair. Upon whose bosom snow has lain. Who intimately lives with rain. Poems are made by fools like me, but only God can make a tree. I can tolerate the references to God in that. Just like I can tolerate nature and nature's God in the Declaration of Independence. Because if there is a spark of divinity to this world, it certainly must be found in the variety of living things. Joyce Kilmer just about grabbed the whole blessed notion with that short verse. I think that I shall never see a vineyard lovely as a tree. For vineyards rise and vineyards fail. And Pinot Noir next to a redwood pales. They want it all. They want it all. If the world was down to one last redwood, and I can say this with some degree of certainty because of the human history we have already before us, if the world was down to its last redwood tree, there would be some profiteering bastard looking at it, saying, well, you know, that's about, that looks about like 4 square feet there, fellas. We could stick a vertical septic tank in it. Charge somebody to use it. We could put a portage on there, boys. And just run a straight pipe out into the ocean there. This is the coast, after all. That tree is getting in the way of our shareholders' quarterly profits. God almighty. It's really... You know, we say it, and we say it, and we say it, and we say it, but somehow along the way, I think we always hope, well, you know, maybe someday they'll say, enough. We've got enough. But we know better, don't we? The most ambitious and controversial project is Preservation Ranch. Mr. Orwell, oh, Mr. Orwell. Premium Pacific Vineyards purchased about 20,000 acres and wants to turn up to 2,000 acres into vineyards, mostly on hills and ridges. The Napa developer plans to use wine profits to restore forests on the remaining 18,000 acres. Oh, sure. 'Cause we've got 1,000 years to sit around and wait for those trees to come into their own.
We believe this is going to be a model for how you can restore damaged, wounded lawns, said Richard Wallach, co-chief executive of Premium Pacific Vineyards.
Some local citizens, calling themselves Friends of the Gualala River, working in tandem with the Sierra Club and other environmental groups, are trying to protect the forests. Among other things, they claim that there is not enough water to support the vineyards, that the vineyards themselves, by virtue of the pesticides and fertilizers, will pollute the stream itself. And, yeah, there are salmon in those streams and other aquatic wildlife equally valuable to the overall ecosystem. And they'll be harmed, too. There's really nowhere to run and hide, is there? Do you think for an instant, and we've got some evidence, you know, do you think for an instant that if the profiteers could get their hands on our national parks, they wouldn't absolutely raise them to the ground in search of the elusive whole unholy profit? They want it all. Whatever you've got, they want. Because their right, by virtue of their wealth, is far superior to any right of occupation or presence or heritage that you might have. They want it all. Jude writing in with a link exploring the Eel River Valley. Saying, I walked among these gentle ones. You know, if you go for a walk in the woods here in almost level West Virginia, with very few exceptions, you will not find much in the way of old growth, because this entire state, as well as much of eastern Kentucky and southwestern Virginia, were absolutely scalped about 100 years ago. Because there was timber needed for the railroads, and the railroads were needed for the coal industry. And so I haven't much in the way of a chance to walk among anything nearly so magnificent as a redwood. And hence my fascination and adoration of those live oaks down in Georgia. Fellow told me it's absolutely illegal to cut down a live oak in McIntosh County, Georgia. Good. Good. It would be nice to walk among redwoods. But more than just myself, it would be nice to take my children for a walk among redwoods. Take pictures of them sitting at the base of one and looking up skyward into that filtered light. Print it and frame it and put it in a chest and hide it away so that someday, when they are old, curious grandchildren, or perhaps even great-grandchildren, can look at them and say, "Grammy, did you ever see one of the really big trees? What was it like?" Because like I said, and I got away from my point. If that, talking about that last tree, and, well, we can put up a port-a-john and charge people a quarter to take up. Right. Because we have evidence. Because we have, in the remote Pacific Ocean, a little tiny dot of land sticking up out of the water that the people who lived there called Rapa Nui. That we call Easter Island, for some godforsaken reason. Where there once were many trees. But where eventually it got to the point where there was only one. Only one tree. And we know that with that one remaining tree, it took an axe to it. We've been very good in our sciences at identifying species on this planet that are so profoundly dangerous that they will wipe out entire swaths of land. The Bible speaks of plagues of locusts descending upon Pharaoh. We know what rats can do. We know that the nature of an overpopulated species is to eat everything in sight. A flock of turkeys here in the Appalachians can literally starve a herd of deer because they both feast on the nut mass from oaks and hickories, and the turkey is a far better forager. And for all its tiny brain, a damn sight smarter than a damn deer. But of all those species that can absolutely ruin the life-giving qualities of their host, none are quite so effective as we are. If you were to pick up a book by Charles C. Mann, which I've been talking about for years now, called 1491, and learn a little bit about what North America was, or the Americas in general, before filthy, disease-infested white people landed on its shores, you would know that in North America, just inland from the beaches themselves began a largely hardwood forest that extended all the way to the Mississippi River. It was said that a squirrel could start in the Atlantic Ocean and not get its feet wet till it got to the Mississippi. We know now that it was managed forest. It wasn't all brambly. It was filled with paths and byways. In addition to the turkeys and the deer and what have you, people foraged those hickory nuts, those butternuts, those black walnuts, the mushrooms that grow deliciously at the foot of poplars. I am not trying to over-romanticize things, but if ever there was an Eden, North America, before the filthy, dirty, disease-infested white people got here, was about as close as one was likely to get. And immediately upon the arrival of the white people, they completely redesigned that forest. First, they cut down what was there. One of the predominant species was something called the American chestnut. It barely exists east of the Mississippi anymore because of a blight brought over from Europe. Or perhaps Asia. I forget which. Colloquially called wormy chestnut, it's damn near as hard as iron. You about can't get a saw through it. But if you do and you make something of it, it will last damn near forever. Over at the Shining Arts and Crafts hub called Tamarack in Beckley, there's a craftsman crafts company called the Primitives, and they travel around buying up old barns over 100 years old, which were largely and often framed in that wormy chestnut, and they make exquisite furniture of it. No nails, tongue and groove, dovetail, glue. And they go for tens of thousands of dollars for a bedroom suit. And you can hit it with either side of a ball-peen hammer you want to, and the hammer handle will ring your hands like a split baseball bat on a 100-mile-an-hour fastball. We talk a lot, and Sandra does a brilliant job of talking about the economic circumstances in which the world finds itself. And it has occurred to me lately that if there is to be something that follows the perniciously consumptive blight of capitalism, that something must have an element of humane regard about it. Because we have rendered the planet very small. I have a table here beside me that I am not proud to say is hardwood and was harvested from a forest in Malaysia. And it kind of gives me the we're going to have to figure out a way to be human without being inhumane. Speaking of inhumane, email coming in from Cindy. Thank you for the story on the trees, Bob. You know, when I consider these evil bastards and what they're doing, it makes me religious. It makes me believe that demons are real and these bastards are demons. We need some type of exorcism in our nation, don't we? We've got to learn to be better humans. But speaking of inhumane, are you aware of the story out of Ohio? The government, the state government there, under Governor Ted Strickland, had a ban on exotic animals. Of course, free market libertarian John Kasich and his Repig-Lickin allies let that ban die so that a man who had been convicted of animal cruelty and a number of other charges was permitted to run a private zoo of sorts near Zanesville, Ohio. And in a fit of mental illness and pique, he turned all these wild animals loose and then killed himself. We're talking about Bengal tigers, grizzly bears, wolves, leopards, zebras. 56 so-called exotic animals turned loose on the Ohio countryside. The only remedy that Ohio police could come up with was to gun 49 of them down, and the photograph is sickening. Not since the photographs of vast herds of buffalo gunned down from the windows of passing trains in the Midwest. Not since those days have I seen a photograph quite like this. You know, the Bible says the lion shall lie down with the lamb. Well, I'm looking at a photograph right now of a Bengal tiger laid down with a zebra, laid down with a lion, laid down with a grizzly bear, and all laying down because they are stone dead. Only 6 of the animals were captured alive and taken to the Columbus Zoo. The Humane Society says that the state of Ohio has long been the center of the exotic auction industry. As noted, an executive order came out of the office of former Governor Ted Strickland banning trafficking in exotic animals. But the free market, libertarian, God-fearing, upstanding, patriotic, American, teabagging government of John Kasich, all wrapped up in trying to screw working people out of their rights and benefits, they couldn't be bothered. And of course, I'm sure some of those law enforcement officials that gunned down these wild animals are also hunters. No, Zeke, you gotta lead a zebra a little more, buddy.
quick, ain't they? Reload. Damn, I wish there was a cheater here. Them things are supposed to be fast. I'd like to see if I could get one on the fly. There are 8 states in our union that have no rules whatsoever regarding exotic pet ownership. They are as follows: Alabama, Idaho, Nevada, North Carolina, South Carolina, West Virginia, Wisconsin, and of course, Ohio. And it is cause for crisis. But don't ask the teabaggers for help, because that'd be a regulation. And you know them regulations is a burden on the job creators. If we'd have just left this poor feller alone, he probably could have created several jobs. That's not to say that they had much of a life in the first place. Matt Lutz is the Ohio sheriff who was charged with going wild animal safari hunting outside Zanesville. He said he hoped that the incident would spur more stringent legislation regarding ownership of exotic animals. Ohio Governor John Kasich responded in typical teabag fashion by saying, you know what we need? We need a task force to study this. It's kind of like what happened over here when the studies began hitting about all the cancers and birth defects and heart problems and lung problems that are attended upon mountaintop removal. And the government said, owned entirely by the coal industry, you know, we need to study these studies. We need to study them until you bastards that are complaining about them are dead! Jesus. And just by way of putting a little ha-ha cap on this evening's Thorn in the Side Thursday filibobster. Well, who else? Herb Cain. Trying to muscle in on some bro fro mix Rick man on dog Santorum's turf. Recently, you remember, said that he's seen no science claiming that being gay is anything but a choice. So he shows up on Piers Morgan's program, and hard hitting journalist. For-profit media personality, Piers Morgan, pressed Herb Cain on that gay-by-choice business. Thusly.
First of all, let's talk about homosexuality. Because, unless I'm wrong, you think it's a sin.
I think it's a sin because of my biblical beliefs, and although people don't agree with me, I happen to think that it is a choice.
Do you believe that?
I believe that.
You believe people wait? Seriously, you think people get to a certain age and go, I think I want to be homosexual?
Let me turn it around to you. What does science show? You show me evidence other than opinion, and you might cause me to reconsider that.
I just think it's a load of old claptrap, Herman. The idea that anyone
Where's the evidence?
Just common sense. You're a common sense guy.
I am a common sense guy.
You genuinely think...
But remember,
wait a minute. Let me ask you. You genuinely believe millions...
Now stop it. This is Piers Effin Morgan, the guy who was chosen to replace Larry Suspenders and Sweater Vest King.
He is paid no small amount of cash. To do a program nightly on Chicken Noodle News. He has what we call in the industry a staff. Some of whom are probably versed with something you and I would recognize as research skills. The studies are out there. The science is real. The American Psychological Association, the American Medical Association. For starters, and I don't think old Piers here was just winging it, asking him the questions that just came flying off the top of his little old pumpkin head. He was asking him prepared questions. And if you already know or can reasonably apprehend that Herb Cain is going to say, well, I think it's an opinion. You show me the science. Then what you do is you got a bunch of science papers stapled together and you say, here's one from the American Psychological Association. Here's one from the American Medical Association. Here's one from the American Geneticists Association. Here's one from the American Neurology Association. You want some more, Herb? This is a little master class in why the for-profit media are dying. In why, depending on any of these clowns, for information freighted with any sort of relevance is a fool's errand. But we ain't done. Oh, no. Continue, fellas.
...of Americans wake up in their late teens normally and go, you know what? I quite fancy being a homosexual. You don't believe that.
You know what? With all due respect and all love and honor to our friends in the UK... That's the wrong accent for that assertion. At least with an American audience. But that's just me being snarky. It's not, damn it. You know, I'm a 48-year-old hillbilly, for Christ's sakes. And I got this one figured out, and so do you. But Piers Morgan, who's being paid enough money to burn down a soaking wet herd of wet elephants... There's that redundancy thing again. Has the question backwards. I don't quite fancy that, well, a teenager gets up and says, I think I'll be a homosexual. No, 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 don't make it easy for Herb Cain. What we want to know is when the straight kid wakes up and says, by Jove, Jiminy, I do believe I'll be a heterosexual. That's the question you ask, Herb Cain. But I digress.
Piers, you haven't given me any evidence to convince me otherwise, nor has any...
Score one for Herb! 'Cause no, he hasn't! 'Cause if he did... Well, that might be journalism. And we can't have CNN engaging in any of that. Next thing you know, they might stop doing specials that portray mountaintop removal workers as victims. And then what would the friends of coal say now, really, honestly?
Cuts instinct down and tells me it has to be a natural thing.
Okay, so
instinct? Really? Instinct? Jiminy.
Your gut instinct against my gut instinct.
Yes.
It's a wash. It's a push. That being said, I respect their right to make that choice. You don't see me bashing them or anything like that. I respect their right to make that choice.
Come on, Herb! When did you make the choice to be straight? I mean, how old were you? 10? 12? Was there hand lotion involved? When was it, Herb?
I don't have to agree with it. That's all I'm saying.
It would be like a gay person saying, Herman, you made a choice to be black.
We know that's not the case.
Jesus, I gotta leave that one alone. It's like saying, Herb, you made a choice to be black. Well, we know that's not the case. Leave it alone, Bob. Must not play.
You know that.
I was born black.
Yeah, but they may be. Maybe if they said
this,
you would find it offensive.
Pierce, this doesn't wash off. I hate to burst your bubble.
I don't think being homosexual washes off.
Well, maybe you're right. I'm just simply saying.
You concede I might be right?
That's my. You might be right, but what I'm saying is this is just my opinion.
Picked a bad day to quit huffing glue. Pierce, this don't wash off. Because, oh God, Irish Spring, Life Boy, Ivory, Zest. Just wash that gay away. New from Procter & Gamble, it's Gay Be Gone. Throw your homosexual teenager in the washing machine with two cups of this stuff, and he'll come out so straight you won't even need to iron him. That's right, Gay Be Gone. New from Kane Industries. Now we do gotta take a break. We just do. Did I just say do gotta? I need to vacation. I said do gotta. I'm just sad. All right, everybody who's on hold, please stay that way. We will come to you out of the break. On the way, it being Thursday and whatnot. On the way, Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen with the Green News Report. I think Thursdays and Tuesdays are two of my favorite days because I get the Green News Report and I like it so much. So the Green News Report is on the way, followed by your calls if you have the patience to simply remain on hold, which would be cool. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. Oh, yay, show tunes.
I'm going to wash that man right out of my hair. I'm going to wash that man right out of my hair and send him on his way. Get the picture? I'm going to wave that man right out of my arms. I'm going to wave that man right out of my arms. I'm going to wave that man right out of my arms. Send him on his way. Don't try to patch it up. Tear it up, tear it up. Wash him up, dry it up.
to change. Ride that man right off your range. Rub him out of the roll call and drum him out of your dreams. Oh ho!
If you laugh at different comics,
if you root for different teams,
waste no time, weep no more. Show him what the door is for.
Preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, October 20, 2011.
We need serious regulatory reform, ending the EPA's regulatory reign of terror.
The EPA will have doors locked and the lights turned off.
It is a cemetery for jobs at the EPA.
The EPA under attack at the GOP presidential debates.
We're not just in this chamber to represent the polluters.
White House blasts the climate change denial industry. Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, that is.
This parliament today has grabbed the future with both hands.
Australia forges ahead with a carbon tax. Dire warnings on future high energy and food prices. Plus, surprise, scientists got it wrong.
I told you they don't know what they're talking about.
The Arctic ice is melting faster than predictions.
Oh. All of that and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Should we abolish the EPA? 65% of Americans say...
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, the GOP's war on the EPA continues, as it did in this week's 11 millionth GOP debate.
Yes, Republicans held their latest debate for the 2012 presidential candidates this week, appropriately at a casino in Las Vegas. The candidates are all united in their intentions for U.S. energy policy and the environment, summed up pretty much as drill everywhere, even in national parks, and end all regulations that protect the environment and public health and prevent polluters from dumping even more into your backyard because they believe Americans must choose between jobs and their health.
That's actually Rick Perry's jobs plan, isn't it? Drill, 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 baby, drill.
Pretty much. Now contrast the GOP with Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, Democrat of Rhode Island, who delivered delivered a blistering speech on the Senate floor last week condemning the climate change denial industry and their friends in Congress.
We're not just in this chamber to represent the polluters. We're supposed to be here to represent all Americans. And Americans benefit from environmental regulation big time.
White House detailed the fact that cleaning up industries actually creates jobs right here in America, and the economic gains outweigh the costs by a ratio of 30-1.
Over the lifetime of the Clean Air Act, for every $1 that it costs to add on pollution controls, Americans have received about $30 in health and other benefits.
The senator's comments are in stark contrast from what you hear from the Republicans, who are telling us that the EPA cost jobs. The EPA is a job killer. That's what they have been saying in these debates. And a new majority Senate report from the Democrats shows that it is the opposite, that it is actually true, that the EPA is a job creator.
Senator Whitehouse called the climate change denial industry and the polluters who fund it, quote, parasites for successfully lying to the public that the science is not settled, even though 98% of climate scientists say human activities are responsible for global warming, and noting that the military, the insurance, and energy industries are all making major preparations. Meanwhile, a new poll confirms again that the vast majority of Americans, including a majority of Republican voters, support the EPA's clean air and water rules and want the EPA to protect public health, showing a high level of support that reaches across age groups and party lines. At the same time, at the International Energy Agency in Paris this week, the world's finance and energy ministers were unusually blunt, saying in a statement after their meeting that the world faces, quote, a dire situation, and that unless a complete change of course is made to deal with surging energy demand around the world, we can expect food and energy prices to, quote, skyrocket. But Down Under is stepping up. Australia's lower house of parliament has passed landmark legislation to establish a direct carbon tax on the top 500 polluters in Australia to begin next year.
This parliament today has grabbed the future with both hands. And that future will be one about clean energy jobs. It will be about a better environment.
That was Australia's first female Prime Minister, Julia Gillard, who praised the historic moment in Parliament. The legislation is expected to sail through the Senate next month.
Glad Australia's getting something done on this, even as we aren't.
Meanwhile, a new study of the Arctic shows that scientists were wrong in their predictions of Arctic ice melt. After a near-record summer ice loss in 2011, researchers compared the current trend with the predictions of the scientists in the last report of the IPCC, the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Turns out the IPCC scientists were wrong. They were too conservative in their estimates, and the actual current rate of ice loss is accelerating much, much faster than they predicted.
For more on all of our stories here today and the ones that we couldn't get to, yes, the ones you don't hear in the corporate mainstream media, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider helping us to continue telling you the stories you're not otherwise hearing across your public airwaves. Download us anytime on iTunes, listen to us on your mobile device via Stitcher, and of course, follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Who fear water?
Total Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Total Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No. See, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, stuff for my dog.
Holy crap! There's even stuff for all my pregnant friends!
And hippies!
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Total Genius. We got your soap right here.
And don't worry about that body stuff!
www.bubblegenius.com.
It's your second hour in the liberal sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
You are indeed on a thorn in the side Thursday, gray and cold and kind of icky outside here in the hills and hollers of what's left of almost level West By God, Virginia. I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is The Horn. It's about 10 minutes past the hour, and we've got a full slate here on the phone line, so I will merely ask your patience as we go through all of them. Before we do go to the phones, I want to share an email with you, because this is the kind of inspiring stuff that has kept things going over the years, the kind of inspiration that makes the whole thing well worth the doing. Slug line on the email, The Horn, north of the border. Well, Bob, The Horn is having an impact on at least one young mind in Canada. This is just beautiful. Just got back from my big lad's Meet the Creature night. Imagine my surprise when his English teacher shared that the lad gave a passionate and well-presented speech on bias in the mainstream media. The teacher asked who Bob Kincaid was, so I told him. Hey, he's this hillbilly that lives down in West Virginia and rants away on the Internet every night. Oh, thank you very kindly for sharing. He also asked about Mike Malloy, filled him in on that as well as I could. I guess Max used mountaintop removal as one of his key examples about hugely important stories that get either no coverage or very dodgy coverage. Who knew that the times he sits over my shoulder as I listen online and catch up with everyone in the chat room are actually sinking in? Well done, sir. Kath from Canada. No, Kath, well done to you. Well done to you. I get misty-eyed over things like that. Truly I do. Because really, that's the only form of eternity that exists. Making an impact going forward into the future. It's the same reason that I persist in telling my children stories about their Uncle Fred, who never came back from the Second World War, or about Pa Davis, their great-great-grandfather, or O. Goad, one of their other great-great-grandfathers. And lots of other folks who aren't here anymore. Because those are the things of which heritage are made. And to pass information and have it mean something to the next generation coming along is of inestimable value. And hopefully it means that next generation will talk among itself and realize that my generation and the generations ahead of us have managed through failure, inactivity, or simply being outnumbered. We've managed to screw their world up pretty damn good, and that leaves them a hell of a job and a hell of a hole to dig out of. Yeah, the Arctic ice cap is melting faster, flush. Whoopsie, the scientists did get it wrong. Glad Brad and Desi had that story in there. 13 minutes past the hour, and we go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brad, it's Cassie.
Hey, Cassie, how are you?
I'm good. So you have had a big impact on a lot of kids in the next generation. You know that, right?
I can count three.
More than that.
Okay, and three here. So we're up to six.
Okay, who are you counting as three?
You, Max, and to some extent, our good buddy Bruce Birch's son, Casey.
Uh-huh.
Okay, let's make it four. Maybe Lucas.
I was going to say, do you remember that he got kicked out of class? He got suspended in fifth grade for talking about the Republicans stealing the election?
I had forgotten that.
He went to school, and they had a talk about the election, and he explained what election fraud was, and he explained what Ohio was, and the teacher got so mad at him, she sent him to the office, and the office called Betsy and made her pick him up from school, and when she went to pick him up from school and she found out why he got kicked out of class, she took him out for ice cream.
And, you know, I try to have a little bit of that impact here at home as well, Cassie. Ferg has turned into quite the young guitar player.
Yeah.
And they have a talent show at the end of the year every year at his sad little high school. And I've just about got him convinced. We had a big talk the other night. I've just about got him convinced to enter this year. He's very shy about playing in front of anyone except maybe me or his mother or his sisters. But I've just about got him convinced.
Oh, those are the most fun.
Yeah, I've just about got him convinced to play and sing as best he can.
Tell him if he makes a mistake. Bob?
Yeah, right here.
If he makes a mistake, just pretend that it's a comedy act and then make like 10 more mistakes and just laugh with the audience.
Yeah, that's the old juggler's rule, Cassie. If you drop something, make it look like part of the act.
Right. So it's the same thing if you're going to perform in front of a group. Exactly the same.
Well, and
as long as you have a backup plan, then you can do it.
And what's kind of inspiring is I've got him about halfway convinced that it would be okay for him to do Iris DeMent's Wasteland of the Free.
Oh. Wait, do I know that?
I think you do. I'll play it in a little bit. How's that?
Okay. So that's not why I called.
Of course not.
And
How were midterms? I did see your message last night.
All A's.
Yes.
All A's. I'm ace in my year. So that's good.
Okay, but you're only five frames into the bowling into the bowling match, so they got to stay A's all the way right. But you know that.
Yeah. Anyway, that's also not what I call. So I called because you were talking about, at the beginning, about the guy in Ohio.
Yes.
And all the wild animals. And two things. One is, I saw Rachel Maddow last night.
Mm-hmm.
And one, she had on this guy who is, I don't know, an animal control, another, like, big in Ohio.
Yeah, Jack Hanna, perhaps?
Yes, that's the one. And he said that the problem with Strickland's law and the reason that they have to fix it, now, not why they have to get rid of it, but the reason that they have to fix it, is that they never set up a place. If you take the animals away, they never set up a place to put the animals. And they never set up which law enforcement would take the animals away and how they would handle it.
Right, because it was done on an emergency basis. It was an executive order and not a statute. It needs to be handled by the legislature statutorily.
Oh, and then the legislators will have to think of all the possibilities.
Right.
Okay.
And, of course, you know, the Kasich administration's response to it.
The Kasich administration just said, well, we're not going to enforce it.
Well, they let it expire.
Because otherwise they'd have to, you know, like, employ somebody or spend money on a park or something.
And then somebody might be getting a job through government, and we all know that never happens, Cassie.
Then it's never good if it does.
Oh, absolutely not. It's communism.
Because what if they join the union?
Well, yes.
So anyway, but that's still not why. I mean, I called because that's the story I called about.
That's okay. We're drilling down. We're going to get to why you called.
We're getting there. Okay, so how come... I won't say how come. So this is definitely a story about regulations, and it's a story about the state, and it's a story about teabaggers, and it's a story about all the things that you've been saying and Rachel Maddow said and all of that stuff. But the part that nobody's saying, this is a story about the prison industry and what prison does to people, and this is a story about the mentally ill. And what happens to the mentally ill in prison?
It most assuredly is, and I'm proud as punch that you found that angle.
Because that's really where the story is.
I mean, the one thing, and I've read several accounts of this, Cassie, and the one thing I don't, you know, the guy went to prison, right?
Yes.
What happened to the animals? Did he get out of prison and go and get more animals?
I think he had somebody running the farm for him. He had like a son-in-law or somebody.
I mean, the one thing I did see is that periodically various and sundry state agencies would be called out because he had these animals running loose.
Right, but I think he had family members who were living there who were, quote, taking care of the animals. But I also will not be at all surprised. Are they going to autopsy these animals?
No, I think cause of death is probably pretty obvious.
Okay.
You only autopsy if you're in the dark about cause of death.
Okay, but I would bet you that these animals are not, were not treated well.
Well, weren't immunized, weren't properly fed. I mean, the feed bill for a big carnivore like a tiger.
Yeah.
You know, they can't eat beans and cornbread four nights a week like people can. They have to have meat.
Yeah, and if you don't give them meat, they'll find their own.
But you're right. This guy was he had real problems. They had, at one point in that county in Ohio, Cassie, they had the Humane Society had a bring your favorite animal fair. They had a pet fair, I think is what they called it, a pet fair. And this guy, year after year, would bring dangerous animals when everybody else was bringing their poodle or their Siamese cat or, you know, their gerbil.
And I bet he didn't bring cages. I mean, you know what? He sounds so mentally ill, and he sounds so deranged.
Would you care to? I mean, I'm betting the guy was a voter. You want to guess his registration?
Well, the party that lets no regulations happen.
Sure.
That's easy. He votes for the people who don't regulate exotic pets. And how is Wisconsin in that list? Is that new? I mean, is Wisconsin on that list because of the new government?
No, it's just never something they got around to.
Never did. Maybe they don't need it.
I mean, even I was, you know, Florida is not on that list, and of course that kind of makes sense because everybody and their cousin seems to want to have a 30-foot boa constrictor in Florida or something. I'm overgeneralizing, of course.
And an alligator in the backyard.
Right.
Okay, so. Here's a little bit of history. In the 1920s, before there were child abuse laws, do you know how child abuse laws started?
No.
So, okay, there was a woman in New York whose name I forgot, but I read about her last year. She complained to the police that her neighbor was beating his child. He was beating his son. And there was no law. The police couldn't do anything because there wasn't a law. And finally, one of the prosecutors in New York said, we can charge him under animal abuse because there were animal abuse laws. And so they charged him with abuse of a mammal. And then it was the next year that the state legislature in New York started to pass laws about child abuse, and that's where the first child abuse laws came from. So here's my question. If I could get removed from my family twice because my family was being abusive to me as a child, why aren't there animal abuse laws? Why, even if there's no laws about exotic pets, why couldn't this guy have been charged with abuse and neglect of mammals? Why can't it go the other way? Because I know Ohio has.
Well, I'm guessing because what's that line? Universal affirmatives are only partially convertible. To wit,
from mammal to child.
A child is an animal, but an animal is not necessarily a child. In other words, it's kind of a one-way street, legally speaking.
There have to be laws. If there's...
No, I mean, they're really...
If there's dog-fighting laws, there have to be laws about neglecting other... I mean, aren't there?
No, there really aren't. I mean, there are places... And bear in mind, just because those eight states have nothing does not presuppose, Cassie, that the other 42 states have really meaningful laws. Okay, I mean, you can go to Ohio. You can go to Ohio. You can go to Texas. You can go to Florida. I'm sorry.
I was only half listening. Is Texas one of those eight?
No, they're not. But it doesn't mean that the laws are effectual. For instance, Texas is one of those places you can go, and they'll have, and so is Florida, so is Ohio, where you can go on a big game safari. No kidding.
Oh, right, yeah. Right.
And you can pay money and say, I want to blow away an elephant. And they'll have some.
What Dick Cheney was doing when he shot the other.
No, he was out on. No, he was birding. But you know, even that, sometimes you go on a bird hunt, like say pheasant or whatever, and they're cage raised pheasants. And so they have to be placed by the hunter in the grass or by the. Proprietor out in the grass, and the dogs run up on them because the dogs know where the proprietor always hides them, and they flush the birds, and you blast the birds. I mean, I think it was out of the state of Washington, and the case came up again and again and again, and it's happened in Florida again and again and again, where you'll have people, and I'm not trying to be prurient or anything like that, but it's just a fact. In Washington, there was a guy who was repeatedly busted for having sex with horses. And the Washington legislature just couldn't quite get around to passing a law that said, thou shalt not do it with a horse.
Right, but I bet they have a law that says that you can't do it with another man.
Well, maybe not now, but at one point, I'm sure they did. And see, that's the problem. You know, you go back to that history of the origins of child abuse. Up until that period of time, this was a country that was run on the barbarities that are ever present throughout, among other things, well, the Bible.
Yeah.
And remember, that Old Testament that right-wingers hold so dear and love so much contains a passage that says, and if thy son be disobedient, take ye him unto the elders of thy town, and say to them, I have a disobedient son who will not hearken unto the wisdom of his father. And yea, verily, the town elders shall take him to the outside the walls of the city, and he shall be stoned until dead.
Well, also, I mean, and I heard this so many times in Texas, spare the rod and spoil the child.
Yeah, and that phrase, Cassie, is even bass-ackwards.
I hate that phrase.
Well, but it's not hateful if you understand where it comes from. You know, some of the Christ imagery is that of the good shepherd, right?
Yeah. Well, everybody's a shepherd in the Bible.
Well, it's pretty much the only jobs they had to create. But the imagery is used of as Christ as a shepherd of a flock. And, you know, there's that one story where it talks about, where he says, shall not a good shepherd leave 99 of his sheep to go and find the one that has lost its way? You know, that kind of stuff. So when you are talking about, but of course, spare the rod and spoil the child comes out of the Old Testament again. But the rod is not always thought inside the Bible as being, you know, like you'd use in a caning. It's also the thing that you gently tap the sheep or the goat with to give it gentle guidance in the way that you would have it go. It is a tool of guidance and not of recrimination. And so when we say spare the rod and spoil the child, what that means, and this is kind of like, for instance, the right wing is on Sodom and Gomorrah was destroyed because of the homosexuals, right? Well, if you go up into the book of Ezekiel, it says the sin of Sodom was that it was proud of itself and not of a sharing and giving and welcoming nature.
Well, didn't that
which is a big difference. So just
this guy's daughter?
Just to finish real quick. So spare the rod and spoil a child means that if you do not give gentle guidance to a child, if you just let the child run wild, you will, in fact, spoil the child because the child will not have the sufficient guidance to understand the essential rules for how to live in the tribe. And doesn't that just make so much more sense?
But they're so literal. Okay, so speaking of the Bible.
Yes.
I want to go on to your other story about Herman Cain. The same Bible that he says is against homosexuality, first of all, it really isn't. Second of all, really, it's against rich people.
There's a whole bunch of it, yeah.
Third of all, it says that humans are created in God's image.
Kind of hard to get around that part, yes.
So if men are created in God's image and some men love each other, then isn't that okay? I mean, how do you...
Well, and that, you know, that just goes to show the tremendous degree of cognitive dissonance that one has to be able to tolerate inside one's own head, Cassie, in order to be a fundamentalist or a teabagger or a Republican or what have you. Because what you said is the truth. And they will, you know, the right-wingers, God's perfect. Okay, so God's perfect, but God makes flawed humans.
Well, that's
and that's why they have to. That's why they have to rely.
It's our flawed, right? We're not angels. Yeah, we're flawed. That's
right. But not according to their worldview. But the problem is that the reason they behave that way. That's where they get this. It's a choice business. Because if their God is perfect as they say, then he cannot. It is impossible for him to create a flawed creature. So it has to be a choice. You have to wake up one morning and say, you know, I'm just not going to be satisfied until I've had sex with another guy. Or, in your case, another woman.
Okay, well...
Because it has to be...
It's completely ridiculous because everyone in the Bible is flawed. I mean, the only... Okay, so angels and God are not flawed. And that's it. Everybody else is flawed. So, I mean, you know, even serpents are flawed. I mean, like, everybody's flawed. Anyway, but back to Herman Cain.
Yes.
Bob?
Right here.
So back to Herman, I'm sorry, I keep, because I lost you like four times on the last call, I just keep checking that you're there. So.
Lo, I am always with you, okay?
So going back to Herman Cain.
Yes.
The same people who pick out one thing about lying down next to another man, those same people who take that and say, oh, that means that homosexuality is bad and that it's evil and that it's way worse than, you know, hurting the poor or not feeding the hungry, right? All those same people are the same people who spent how many hundreds of years saying that the Bible justified slavery and
yes.
That the Bible and that the Bible said that blacks were less than white.
And that women needed to remain silent, and it was used, of course, to argue that women should not vote.
That was biblical?
Sure. Because it's, you know, it's right there in the third book of Galatians, or third chapter of Galatians, or the sixth chapter of Flip-Floppians, where it says, women, keep your daggum mouth shut in church, and if you've got a question, ask your husband. And wives, be subservient to your husbands as the church is subservient unto Christ. You see, Cassie, from the instant that Christianity was founded, it became a weapon. It stopped being a faith and started being a weapon. The minute that the argument between...
How does Herman Cain not see that, I mean, when, what was Piers Morgan, whatever his name is?
Piers Morgan,
said,
right.
When he said to Herman Cain, you didn't wake up this morning and decide to be black, or wake up one morning and decide to be black, why didn't he, besides not having science, which is unforgivable, why didn't he talk to him about the way that that same Bible put him down? And how can he say that a black man can be president if the Bible very clearly says that black men were the fall of Noah, which it doesn't?
No, the sons of Ham.
Which Ham was one of the children of Noah.
Right.
Right, so, yeah. But, if he knows, even if he doesn't know that Herman Cain's going to say, prove it to me with science, and he's not ready, he has to know that Herman Cain's going to say, not, it's my belief, which he did, which you can't fight belief. You've been saying that for 100 years. You can't fight belief. But what's more important is he knew he was going to say, it's biblical teaching. And then you come back and you say, you know, for hundreds of years. I mean, how do you not know to come back and say for hundreds of years the Bible taught?
Well, first of all, Piers Morgan probably doesn't know any more about the Bible than your average 5-year-old.
Science.
Right, exactly. But the larger question, as I put it, is, because this is a big old fat fastball right over the middle of the plate that you could drive right out of the park. When Herman says it's a choice, you look at Herman and say, Herman, when did you choose to be straight?
And then Herman goes, well, you see, when I was 19, I tried this, and I kind of
What he'll do, Cassie, is he'll say,
I go back to girls.
What he'll say is, well, that's the way God made me. That's the natural order of things. And then Piers would get to
the natural order of things for many, many years was that blacks were subservient.
Bingo. But when he says that's the natural order of things, that's when you look him in the eye and say, so, Mr. Cain, are you saying that gay people are unnatural? That they are somehow not as human as you?
So, Bob, if you could do this on the fly, and I can do this now, and I'm pretty sure I could have done this for years now, why can't somebody who gets paid the big bucks and has a staff and people to think about an interview before the interview happens, why can't he do this?
Because they're afraid.
Of Herman Cain?
And the whole teabagging machine. Remember, the last debate that CNN broadcast, or TNN as they came to be called, was the official teabagging debate. They are heavily invested, Cassie, in trying to be Fox Light. They want a piece of the same audience Fox has, and devil take the hindmost with the normal half of the country who is not entitled to anything resembling actual unbiased presentation of the news. Look at this. What's her name? Burnett? Woman that they've brought on to talk about business? This woman has journalistically ethical conflicts coming out of her nose and her ears. You know, she's engaged to an investment banker from Wall Street. And so, naturally, she's on the air supposedly presenting unbiased coverage and making sport and making mockery of Occupy Wall Street.
Well, yesterday when she tried to do her report, I don't know where she was, but she tried to do her report, and the protesters didn't let her. So the camera crew kept trying to quiet down the people around her, and every time they tried to quiet them down, they got louder and louder, and she couldn't even do her report. She was doing a report outside somewhere.
Right. And that's a good thing. You know, they've done the same thing with Jerry Rivera. But the reason he doesn't ask those hard questions is because there are advertisers out there who most assuredly don't want any hard questions asked, Cassie. Because, the whole reason, and I don't know that I've ever maybe it's time to reiterate this. The reason, and nobody else has picked up on it, it's just little old me. The reason I call them the for-profit media is, A, there's nothing mainstream about them.
No.
Whatever passes for the mainstream, the the median average American that is so frequently referred to as Joe and Jane six-pack or soccer moms or NASCAR dads or what the heck ever. They have nothing in common with them. Their job is to divert that demographic. So mainstream media doesn't fit.
That's what all of television does.
So I call them the for-profit media. Not because there's something inherently wrong with making a profit. There isn't. But the for-profit media, to me, are the for-profit media, Cassie, because the entire raison d'etre of them doing what they do is to make a profit. It is not to do journalism. It is not to inform the public. It is not to fulfill the obligations made necessitated by virtue of presence in the fourth estate. None of those high-blown, high-minded, constitutional stuff that, you know, we get weepy over in old Frank Capra films. No, the reason is to make a profit. And it's been, you know, it was a while in coming. When ABC took its sports guy, Rune Arledge, and put him in charge of the news division, you know, that was a real flare up in the dark sky saying, you know what, the news is now going to be entertainment. And so that's what you have over the course of two or three decades is this slow, inexorable merging of entertainment and so-called journalism until you wind up with this hodgepodge hybrid Frankenstein's monster mishmash where you can't tell the difference between the entertainment and the actual journalism. And that, of course, gives rise to Fox, Limbaugh, the rest of the whole dirty bunch.
And meanwhile, you can't get advertisers to help the horn.
Oh, heck no.
Or even contributors.
Well, we struggle. We're about to have our sixth birthday. We must be doing something right.
That's right.
So
I was there almost at the beginning.
Yes, you were. Yes, you were.
What, a month after you started?
Right. You absolutely were.
I remember. I only missed a month or two.
Yeah.
You came and recruited a whole bunch of us out of Powers and Morrison.
Yeah, and it was about the same time that we met John Fox and Bruce Birch. And Peter came on board.
And what's his name in Chicago?
Joe Vecchio. You can't say any of this without mentioning Joe. It was pretty amazing. I mean, we've had amazing people through the years, and you know, the saddest thing of all is that most of them have fallen by the wayside because sooner or later you gotta earn a living.
Yeah. I would bet you, check your email, I would bet you that it's more than three or four kids that you influence.
Oh, we've got folks in their 20s. We've got folks in their 30s. We have a...
You know, Bob, in 10 days from now, I'm going to be 20.
That's amazing.
Can you believe it?
No. Frankly, no.
10 days? 11 days. 11 days from now.
And a sophomore in college who makes A's on all our midterms.
Yes. That part's not surprising.
No, I mean, well, we kind of expected it, but still, it's...
It was harder last year.
Well, the freshman year...
I figured it out a little more.
Yeah, and the freshman year is supposed to be harder. That's the weed-out year.
Well, also, like this year, I know what to read, and I know what things I can skip. And I know, you know, I have a better sense of how things work.
Well, you've learned how to read professors, among other things.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, do you know what direction you're going in next semester, or what the class load will hold?
No, I don't know yet.
Probably no need to get in a hurry.
No.
But you've made friends and you're in the social scene and everything and
Yeah.
You're part of the Green Club, right?
Yes. Yep. And I went to Occupy Wall Street last weekend.
Did you really?
Yes. I went with about 8 other people.
And your impressions were?
New York is too crowded. and Occupy Wall Street was way too crowded. But no, it was amazing. It was amazing and it was wonderful and it was really eclectic. I mean, there were just all kinds of people and all kinds of stuff going on and just, the messages, if you know how Wall Street and the wars and contractors and Monsanto, and you know how all those things are related, if you spent your entire childhood listening to the horn, then you can see how 50 different messages is really one message. But I can also see how somebody just looking at the signs can say, well, they don't have a consistent message. Because you have to really understand the issues to understand how this person's sign means it has the same message as that person's sign. You have to understand that it's Americans against the top 1%. If you understand that it's 99% against 1%, or 99% wanting their share of 1%, if you understand that, then you understand that all of the signs and all of the chants have to do with that. But if you just look at each sign at face value and you only look at the most outrageous of each sign, then I can understand how you can walk away from it with and think that it's not a consistent message. Does that make sense?
It does, and I don't think we can avoid noting that there are people. Well, you know, we were talking Bible a few minutes ago. There are none so blind as the, let him who has ears to hear, let him hear. Let that person who has eyes, let them see. You know, if some right winger, some teabagger, some 1%er goes down there, well, Muffy, I certainly don't understand what all these young people with all these piercings are trying to say. Then, you didn't want to understand in the first place.
Right. But if you stop and you ask 3 people, tell me about your sign, tell me about why you're here, then you'll actually hear that they're saying the same thing.
See, I would give anything to go there and broadcast, but...
Do you know Cenk Uygur was supposed to broadcast from there, but it rained and he stopped? He broadcasted for 2 days and then he stopped because it rained.
Well, Juanita told us the other night that he was going to. And, it's kind of hard to broadcast, it takes more courage than I have to sit around a bunch of high-voltage electrical equipment with the rain coming down.
But, okay, first of all, it didn't rain that hard. And second of all, isn't that what they have umbrellas for? I mean, they had like 3 people. And I'm sure he could have said, hey, I want to do a live broadcast. Can somebody hold up, plastic over our heads so that the equipment doesn't get wet? And the people there, 50 of them would have volunteered to hold the plastic up.
But see, for me, Cassie, and I'm not disagreeing to be disagreeable, for me, to broadcast from Occupy Wall Street is not about setting up your broadcast table just like if you were back in your home studio. For me, to broadcast from Occupy Wall Street would be to be on your feet with a microphone in your hand, walking around saying, talk to me, tell me your truth.
Well, that's what he did the first day. He really did. That's what he did. The first day was all interviews.
And, there are we've learned to do some pretty doggone lightweight broadcasting.
Don't you and Ferg just go with a cell phone most of the time?
Well, no, I mean...
A pair of cell phones.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've done it with a pair of cell phones, and it really, really does work that way. But if you want to have good audio, not so much. There's other ways to get around it, though. But if you want it, like for sending streaming video, the way we work it is to use the Sprint phone that has unlimited bandwidth and 4G, and use that as a wireless hotspot.
Yeah.
and then use the other phone that has better optics to run Ustream the Ustream mobile app.
Through the 4G.
Yeah, and that way you know you've got sufficient bandwidth to keep it going.
Right, and one umbrella would be sufficient.
Yeah, pretty big umbrella.
Okay.
And,
anyway,
and you know, horn intern junior grade Ferg with the backpack on his back and staying close to me so we don't run out of wire. We've kind of perfected this making bricks without straw thing over the years, Cassie.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, we continue to be so very proud of you. Marty just wrote in from out in California. He says, Cassie's 20 and a straight-A student. I'm glad she's on our side.
I am our side. Well, I'm part of our side.
Well, are there... Babbling again. Are there good progressive people inside your sophomore class there?
Yes. Yes.
And do you network together? And do
us, almost all of us are scholarship kids.
But do you network and do you message together and do you talk about issues?
Yes. Absolutely.
Good.
We even have a progressive student alliance.
Of which you're a part.
Be a liberal student alliance, but I'll join the progressive. There's no liberal student alliance. I'll join the progressive student alliance.
Well, you know, with words like neoliberal around floating around out there, it's probably it's getting uncool to be liberal again. I wish they'd just leave the language alone and let us be something.
Well.
Then again, for years and years and years, I've been saying liberals, progressives, Democrats, and other normal people.
Right. Except I'm not sure that Democrats are normal people most of the time. I'm not either.
And when I say Democrats, I'm talking
not professional Democrats.
Right. I'm talking about Democrats like
voters.
Me. You know, who were raised by FDR Democrats
voters,
and
right. Democratic voters, not Democratic politicians.
Yeah. If you've got even one foot in the trough, you don't qualify.
All right. Listen, I have to go.
Well, I imagine so. You've got studying to do, do you not?
I do.
Or does the weekend start on Thursday at Princeton, too?
No. Unfortunately, no.
Okay, good. Because it does in a lot of places.
Yeah, no.
I've only heard about that. No, I never, no, not me.
I have two classes tomorrow. And I also have stuff that I want to get done, because... I might go occupy something this weekend, so I better get my work done tonight.
Well, go forth, Cassie. Good
yeah,
to talk
well,
to you.
I occupied Trenton the first night that it opened.
That's
there were
awesome.
20 of us that went to Trenton. But of the 20 of us from Princeton who went to Trenton, I don't think we had more than 300 people altogether, and it was not an occupation. It was like 3 hours. It was not. But
you know, but it does. You know, it doesn't have to be. But you've got to go.
I gotta go.
But what, you know, do, you know, out of your seat, on your feet, and into the street for 3 hours or 30 minutes. It matters.
Yeah.
It all matters. Cassie, have a wonderful evening, dear.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Cassie at College. That's the name of her blog as well. Let's keep things rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good evening, Brother Bob.
Brother Albert.
Oh, boy, Cassie. Man, I am so proud. I can't wait to vote for Cassie for president. She's going to make a great president, isn't she?
I think she will.
Man, watching her growing up. Remember? Oh, she was so little. But she's just a bitty the whole time. And she's, like, blossoming into this amazing human being. It's amazing. It takes my breath away. It's almost like, like Herman Cain's lack of logic. You know what I mean?
Yeah, breathtaking in an entirely different way.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I can't even catch a breath on the horn. It's just, I mean, everywhere you turn, and it's exactly that. You know, he's sitting here, what is he talking about? When did he pick to be straight? Oh, he didn't. You know why? because you're born like that. And if the man would ever sit there and take 5 seconds to actually speak to one of them Homer neurosexuals, it rolls off your tongue better than it does mine. But, you know, if you'd ever sit there and ask them, like, hey, you know, I think I've always been straight. How long have you known? Well, pretty much the whole month. I mean, I've had plenty of gay friends. They've all said the same thing. I've pretty much always known. Just the way you're attracted to women, that's how I'm attracted to men. And you sit there and you put it like that, that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Doesn't that make it seem like something, I don't know, reasonable and coherent? Or is that, I mean, I'm going to have to...
I'll see you're coherent and raise you a sane.
I mean, you know, I gotta break out the words of that excellent author, Harlan Ellison, when he said, you know, people have opinions, but you're not entitled to your opinion. You're not. You're entitled to your informed opinion. If you discussion about a subject and you are not informed about it, you have an uninformed opinion. You're only entitled to have an informed opinion. You can't sit there and be uninformed about a subject. You know, I mean, and that's basically what he's talking about. Oh, I have an opinion. Bullshit. No opinions. It's not an opinion. It's not an opinion issue. It has nothing to do with your opinion. Your opinion means nothing. Because you're obviously not informed. Because if you were informed, you would actually had a conversation with a homosexual person, and they probably would have told you, yeah, I've pretty much always been attracted to.
Yeah, see, the whole Herb Cain phenomenon, Albert, just drives me batty. Because I keep thinking back to Dennis Kucinich.
Yeah.
Either 2000 or 2004. Pick one. Dennis, Herb Cain, crazier than a sprayed roach, has already gotten more coverage and more serious interviews than a man who is a million times his intellectual superior got over the course of two presidential election cycles.
Yep.
You know, there it was, 2004. Representative Kucinich, did you really see a UFO?
Yeah.
What did they say? Are you a boxers or briefs man, Representative Kucinich? And yet they're asking this jackass questions of foreign policy? I mean, you, me, anybody, you know, we could eat the brown acid and do as good as Herb Cain.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm glad that Muammar Gaddafi's gone and the walls are breathing.
You know, that's another issue. But real quick, you know, the guy, he took one of the most, and I think most people would probably agree. I mean, if you had a list of, even a top 100, you know, I'd have to stretch it out to a top 100. But I would imagine that Imagine would be in that list of, you know, those top 100 beautiful songs of all time, you know. For most people, no, maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm dreaming. But, it's almost like listening to the Green Minute with, what's his name?
Brad and Desi.
Yeah, Brad and Desi. I mean, listening to that, it's almost like the world has woken up. You're like, oh I could stretch. Oh boy, people are getting it.
I hear the story about the carbon tax passing in Australia, and John and I were talking about that just last night. Mm-hmm. After the show, we had a little tech talk. And, you know, it's another one of those kick the furniture moments because, well, damn it, you know, I'm 48 and I'm too old to be of any use to the Australian people, I guess, by being 48. Otherwise, I could go down there and live with the sane people, or at least at least the marginally sane people.
Yeah, yeah. My goodness. I mean, you know, and of course the ice is melting faster. Of course it is.
Yeah, not just, and oddly enough, not just a little bit faster. A lot faster.
Yeah, oh, exactly. You know me, I like the esoteric and I like sciences and fringes and stuff like that. And my goodness, I can't wait to get myself a Fresnel lens. But did you know with a little, that Raptite stuff, that clear plastic wrap that for the industrial, take a little bit of that, pour some water in it, you can almost basically have your own Fresnel lens and melt glass with water. With the sunlight shining through it. So what do you think that pool of water is going to be doing on a glacier? Well, I mean, you know, it's generally, if it's going to melt glass, that's, you know, that's 700 degrees at least or more. And what do you think that's going to do to a glacier? It's going to be a freaking laser beam right underneath it, and it's going to take its footing out. And that's what they've seen, right? And that's exactly what they saw. Back when we were all right, you know, for a little bit during the 80s and early 90s, right, they started to notice that pools of water would, you know, be developing on glaciers, and next thing you know, the whole thing would calve. Well, that's exactly what we're seeing, and it's a runaway effect, and it's almost like they're almost afraid. You know, it's like when I told you I was at the Museum of Natural History with my children. My God, you had to strain your eyes to sit there and, you know, find any information regarding the extinction event, you know, that we're in the sixth extinction, or the fifth, I forget which one it is, because it was such small print, I forgot. But, you know, you'd think that they would put that into notice. You mentioned Rapa Nui. It's the same deal. That's where we are. Rapa Nui's Earth. You know, we can't sit here and just waste away and, you know, make monuments constantly and chop all the trees down and eat all the animals. And well, I don't even know what the hell is going on in Ohio. What is that? What is that? Who the hell wants a tiger? Why do you want a tiger for? What's wrong with you? Why do you want a tiger? What the hell is that going to do for you? Tigers belong in the wild. And
well, it was. Well, I mean, if that question is legitimate, I can answer it at least in part. It was free market money making capitalized because, among other things, Heidi Klum.
Know
who Heidi Klum is? Yeah, Heidi Klum rented a lion cub from him once for a photo shoot.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, and just the way the god of irony works, it was probably for a PETA ad or something. I don't know.
Boy, and that's the other thing. The guy kills himself and lets all the animals go. What is that? What's wrong with people? And that's the other thing. I didn't know Wisconsin didn't have any laws, but you know what? We have some crazy bastards up here, but I don't think anyone owns a tiger.
Well, unless it's a Siberian tiger, isn't it just sort of wrong? But you know what? You're open for polar bear. They got to have somewhere to go, Albert.
For real. And that's craziness in its own. I mean, that's the thing, you know, like, man. Forget it. I don't even want to think about it. It's so stupid. It brings up a whole can of worms and...
Still have a shot at semi-responsive government in Wisconsin.
So
I can see, you know, I can see a day in the very near future when if a small handful of people in Wisconsin take a look at the Ohio story and go, let's get the law. And have the draft of the damn thing ready when the legislature comes in the session, and a copy sitting on every desk.
Yeah, well, it's
not life changing or anything, but this ought to be something we can get our heads around pretty quick.
You would hope so. I mean, it's like what I was trying to say, like what you said when you talked about how they have to have a facility to hold these animals. They have to have a facility to hold them. Well, who the hell has have a spare pit where I keep 20 lions? That's a state-run thing. What the hell is that? You're not going to want to waste money building this facility to hold the animals that some jackwad's going to kill himself. You would have to prepare for that eventuality because you don't want lions running through your suburban neighborhoods, do you? No. So,
but bear in mind, this is not the only guy in Ohio that has this.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
I mean, Ohio is the beating heart epicenter of this exotic animal weirdness. Who knew?
Yeah, well, it's like when you hear all the reports, I've been hearing them lately, about all these massive pythons and anacondas and everything else, and reticulated pythons and everything else. I mean, you know, and it's these snakes, and people get them, and they grow, and then they're like, oh, I can't keep feeding this thing, and my trail.
Yeah, those articulate pythons, are those the ones that, like, quote Shakespeare and stuff? I'm sorry, I had to, Albert, yeah. Only with you, I couldn't have got away with it with anybody else.
They eat people. So, you know, that's one thing, I guess. You know, once they get to a certain size, you know, I mean, I've seen them. I mean, unless someone's photoshopping like a crazy maniac, you know, I've seen people been cut out of them. So, you know, if it eats a full-grown Asian man, it could eat a woman, you know. Or
a kid.
A kid, you know, and that's really, I mean, forget about it. I mean, that's the thing. You're sitting there putting, they don't belong there. Oh, it just drives me crazy. It just drives me nuts. And these people are like, oh, I have a right to do this. This is my job. Man, come on now. You got to have some regulations. You can't have no freaking tiger and lions in your house. What is that? What is that? I don't understand. What do you want? I don't even understand. It doesn't make any sense.
Can't get there with your little human brain, can you, Albert?
I just simply cannot. I don't understand. I mean, yeah, you know, all right, or oh, if I win the lottery, wouldn't that be cool to have a tiger? But they're only cuddly for a little bit. You're never going to be able to pet that thing once it's full grown. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, unless you're those two German guys.
No, they got bit, remember? The tiger mauled his ass. Remember that?
Yeah, didn't
that's
mean.
Why they're not in love
and that's the thing. Even in that case,
yeah.
The tiger didn't mean to hurt him. The tiger loved him.
He
thought the woman with the funny hat was attacking his cub, and so he picked up what's-his-face by the neck like you would a kitten.
Yeah, I mean, come on. I mean, and that's, you know, I mean, that's the thing. When you're dealing with an animal
Siegfried
that's 800
and Roy.
Pounds. Yeah, Siegfried and Roy. You know, when you're dealing with an animal that's 800 pounds, and if it wants to go, it's going to go. That's right, right? Where does an 800-pound gorilla sleep? Wherever it wants.
Yeah, right.
I mean, that's what it's going to do. And it's like, I mean, a dog is, I mean, God, they don't even want to let, I mean, now I draw the line on that, but they don't even want to let people have a certain dog, pit bulls, and they don't want to let them have this. But this is okay?
Yeah,
I know. It always makes me laugh. It always makes me laugh because I just heard this, and I almost vomited when I heard this. It was on the radio, and they're talking about, you know, not teaching children, you know, letting the parents teach children about sex education. And of course, she's some fundamentalist Christian, and da-da-da-da-da, and of course, she gets some supporter to call in to all about this and that, and how you know some things. Because what if they start talking about the gays, he said? Like, knowing that knowledge is going to influence someone in some sort of negative way.
Well, you know, I played a show tune tonight, and somewhere out there is probably a little confused kid, and it's gay now.
Uh-oh. Bob, what, do you understand the impact you're having on children?
I never thought of myself as Captain Kangaroo. Yeah.
God. I mean, look at Cassie. Come on. She's going to be president. We're good. So they got Gaddafi, right?
Yeah.
Disgusting. That pisses me off. That pisses me off.
Didn't waste any time getting the picture out there.
I thought that was
kind of like illegal.
You know, honestly, now I'm not going to say sentence the guy to death, but the guy who shot him, they got to arrest that dude, and they got to put him in jail. For real. You know, if we learned anything from Nuremberg, right? Now, Gaddafi was a son of a bitch. And the guy was disgusting. And he need to go down. You don't sit there and create, you know, like, it's the same thing, right? It isn't like Libya sort of like Clinton's Bosnia, right? We sent all the, you know, we sent some help and nobody died. And that's sort of like Libya. We sent help and really no one's, you know, none of our troops have died. So you can't say, you know how they were trying to pretend like we're trying to invade the Balkans. But, you know, if we learned anything from Nuremberg, it's that these people need to be held accountable. And that if they're not held accountable, like, now we don't know. Now we don't know anything. Now we can't get any information. We don't know nothing. And so whatever this guy hid, what if he hid his billions of dollars and, you know, wherever? Now we're not going to find out. Maybe he sent this money to the, what's his name? The Lord's Army. Who the hell knows what he did with this money? Who knows what he's done? Who knows all the skeletons in the closet? We don't know because now he's dead because some, you know, body who I'm named. Maybe Gaddafi killed his family, and maybe he felt justified in doing it, but they don't understand that these people owe history. You know, they have a price to pay for history.
Yeah, there is a debt to history.
Yes, exactly.
But you know what, Albert? They've all, these miserable little right-wingers have already run past all of that.
What did they?
Lindsey Graham Cracker.
Yeah.
Oh, South Carolina. Well, you know, if he was any further in the closet, he'd be riding a lion through Narnia. Any chance I get to use that line forevermore. Lindsey Graham Cracker said, "I'm glad it ended the way it did. It took longer than it should have. If we could have kept American air power in the fight, it would have been over quicker. 60,000 Libyans would have been wounded, 3,000 maimed, 25,000 killed." And then this, Albert.
It's worse?
Yes. You know, I saved my Bill Hicks strap-in moments for you.
All right, I'm hitting.
Yeah. Let's get in on the ground. There's a lot of money to be made in the future in Libya. A lot of oil to be produced. Let's get in on the ground and help the Libyan people establish a democracy and a functioning economy based on free market principles.
What? No, you're not. You're kidding.
No. No, I read that earlier, and I just thought, you first, MF-er.
What? I don't even know.
Yeah, I know. The straps are coming loose, aren't they?
I don't even understand. What the hell is he talking about?
I want them Arabs oil. What the hell's our oil doing under their sand?
I knew they were sick. I know we all know they're sick. But no matter how sick you know that these people are, you never expect to hear them say this kind of shit.
Every time you think they've gone as low as they can go, you find the secret handle to the trap door to the sub basement. Let's help them establish a democracy and a functioning economy based on free market principles.
Oh God! What's wrong with these people?
You already laid in the winter's supply of brandy up there, Albert.
Oh my God! I can't even. It doesn't make any sense. I need it. I'm gonna need to mainline it. I can't even.
I like the little curly bendy straws in the bottle myself.
Bob, where does that even come from? How do they pull this? What magic? What kind of magicians are these people? I don't even understand how they fabricate.
Well, no, it's what Cindy said in her email a little earlier. These people will give you religion because you will begin to believe, honest to God, Albert, that there are demons flapping around with their little hidden bat wings under their bespoke suits and little hoof, little cloven hoof feet in their Brooks Brothers shoes.
Oh God, it does. Oh no,
they're demons. They're blood. They drink blood and oil the way that some people mix a little bit of vermouth in gin and call it a martini.
It kills my diaphragm. You know that muscle in between my gut. My body can't process that kind of filth. It gives me brain bubbles. I just, what is he talking about? Free market, what? What is he talking
about? Bear in mind this clown wants to get in on the ground in Libya and build him some infrastructural democracy. He wants to spend your tax dollars doing that, Albert, at the same time that he is hotly opposing an infrastructure bill in the United States Senate for us.
Thank God you can speak, because I mean, I'm in Morse code over here.
Beep, 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 beep.
I mean, it gives me an aneurysm. Are you serious? And they fought him on this, what'd they try to say that he was doing in Libya? Declaration of war, right? I hate these people. They're so stupid.
Well, and of course they're mocking the whole. And I was opposed to us having anything to do with it in the first place. Look, you know, it would have come. This would have ended this way, one way or the other. But I love this. You know, the beginning of this quote, because they would not. I mean, if Barack Obama was out there just gutting terrorists like fish in the streets. They wouldn't be able to cope. They'd have to. Sure. Well, he ain't killing them two at a time.
Yeah.
Hence this. One of the problems I have with leading from behind.
You know.
I'm so proud of my self-restraint and just leave it and just letting that thing hang up over the rim. And if it drops through the hoop, that's fine. We'll just say that Lindsay is probably the last person in the world should talk about anybody leading from behind.
That's, yeah. Well, yeah.
You know, because, you know, he supported the Iraq War, and he supported Afghanistan.
God.
As long as somebody else was doing it.
God.
You know, this guy's a reserve colonel in the JAG Corps in the Air Force.
Yeah.
This guy has never heard a shot fired in anger. It's pitiable if it weren't so manifestly evil.
Amen, Brother Bob. Amen. God.
Well, Albert, I strongly suggest that you loosen the straps a little bit and head for the brandy stash, brother.
Brother, I'm telling you right now, I'll be your capacitor on this one, but God, man, God. Well, all right, brother.
I know.
All right, Brother Bob.
We talk soon. All right, later. All right. Bye. The Sage of Southwest Wisconsin, that's Brother Albert struggling. And I understand that, and I got a feeling you do too. Struggling for something approaching... That Obama, he's leading from behind. Mother. Let's keep it rolling.
Hi
there. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, from Tucson.
Oh, my goodness, fancy.
Oh, my goodness, yes. I just came in from Occupy Tucson, and I'll give you a report from the front there.
Oh, do please.
But Cassie asked, why can't, you know, they take the animals away from places where they're being hurt? And frankly, there are no facilities. We had a thing happen here. They busted a puppy mill. Maybe 200 or so puppies, and I'm so proud of my town. They just went, we need this at the animal shelter. We need food. We need cages. We need this. We need that. And people came and brought and adopted, and it was a beautiful thing. But one of the things we're having now is horses. The economy the way it is, people can't afford to feed their horses. And hay has gone up, and so we got a lot of horses that there's no shelter for them anymore.
I was about to mention something very similar, Fancy, because here in West Virginia, over in one of our little impoverished counties, there was a pair of people who were, and I'm not trying to be cruel. They were, and especially one of them was profoundly mentally ill, and they had. Thoroughbreds, jumpers, and they were starving the horses to death.
Yeah. And
the county stepped in and seized them, and had absolutely nowhere to do anything with them. And again, you know, if you'll pardon my saying so, Fancy, this is another one of those little signposts on the road we're traveling, and you know it's an exit that we apparently got off on some time ago, and the little curving arrow sign said failed state. It's all the things that I mean. This is the United States of America.
One of the things that's happening here is that the smugglers will leave animals in the desert. For those people listening who don't know me, I'm 60 miles from them. I'm 60 miles north of the border, and I'm at the northern end of the Great Sonoran Desert. And we got a lot of dead people who don't, you know, when they're talking about electrocuting them, hell, we got people dying every day out there trying to just make it through on a gallon of water, and they don't. And then the smugglers will leave animals, and so we're dealing with that. I do want to tell one unpleasant story, and then I'll get happy again. But, I had a TV show. I had a talk show for a number of years. And just what you can do on local television is highlight local, you know.
Right.
National, you get plenty of. So I did a lot of local interest things. And I had a lady on one night, and she was breeding wolf-dog mixtures. And so she brought her animals into the studio, and we went around early, and we had the... introduced all the animals to the camera operators and the floor people and sniff them, and everybody was friendly. It was a lovely show, and we sat there. I can remember this animal down next to my chair, and from time to time I'd reach down and pet it. And you realize when you touch these animals is that they're not dogs. They look like dogs, but they're not dogs. And you know that. And this woman was so confident. About, well, mine are so well-trained, and mine do this, and I can handle this. And it was that wonderful, total confidence. And 2 years later, and this isn't, there was a terrible event, and one of the animals took out a toddler.
Yeah.
And if it's, that confidence.
No, it's a wolf.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that Todd, you know, and little foundling children are not always Mowgli.
This is so that I have a real thing about people who attempt to domesticate, because you can only domesticate up to a point. And
look at the zebra. They're profoundly ill-tempered animals. The various and sundry peoples who live where zebras live have tried to domesticate that animal for millennia. And you just can't. Just can't.
Yeah. Now, I want to talk about Occupy, because it's amazing.
Do please.
And I went down originally for organization, and they were in one park, and I talked to my daughter, and I said, now, you know, I'm an old protester. I know about these things. You know, I personally integrated the movie houses in Austin, Texas, well, me and a couple of hundred other people. But I know about marching. What's happening now is so much better organized. So they're doing consensus voting, which takes a long time, but it's good.
It takes a long time.
It does. They were nobody's passing joints. Come on. It's not the protest I remember. Now, my daughter was a protester with the underground nuclear testing in Nevada. She'd go once a year with a group, and it was all pretty pro forma, and what they did, she was in high school, and what they do at that time is they advised the under 18 kids not to get arrested, because if they were going for scholarships and things, this might be a problem. So she was part of the support group, and what they do is they draw a line, and the people who stepped over it, they put the little plastic cuffs on them, and they drove them to Tonopah, which was about 40 miles away, and then she had a vehicle. And she'd pick them up, they'd book them, and then they'd release them, and she'd drive them back to the campsite. And I always hard-boiled about a billion eggs, because, as Wendy says, they're hungry after they've been arrested. So, and Seeds for Peace fed them for a dollar a day on site out there, and they were just awesome what they did. Now, I went down to our Occupy Tucson, and there's probably less than 100 tents, but they're very nicely handled, and they have water in the park. They were serving meals when I got down there, and you can have regular food or you can have vegan. They were organizing a library, so people staying down there can read. If you want to bring down things for the people there to read, you can. They can use a bullhorn, but they were also using the people's microphone, which I kind of enjoyed when you wanted to do that. And
it certainly keeps it keeps people with an urge to orate manageable.
Well, what they did in the organizing committee is they had people lined up, and you could make your proposition, and you could speak for a minute. And so you didn't have to say, you just made your damn proposition and you moved on. And when they got 15 propositions, they then stopped and did a vote. They did a vote on how they'd vote. And this is in early organizing. This wasn't today.
Yeah, and it is kind of unwieldy.
And what they were voting on was, do we pass it at 51%? At 66 2/3%, or at 75%. And what they did is form three lines, 51%, 66 2/3%, and 75%. Then they said, these are the two longest line. Everybody else join the line that is your second choice. And as you know, I can't stand up for very long, so I left about then. But, Just really beautiful consensus, governing, organized, polite, incredibly nice. For those listeners who don't have background on us, Bob and I were both had the privilege of being scholarshiped on the Progressive Voices cruise, last February. Last February. And one of the things that we talked about that was so nice on the cruise was that you could actually talk to people. You didn't have to censor your opinions out in public. You could just, I mean, we had great programs, we had great speakers, we had great forums, but one of the things that was so pleasant is we could talk to each other. And I had that feeling down in the park. And today I had that feeling down in the park.
Excellent.
And if you really want to hate me, it's about 80 degrees right now.
Yeah, this is the rub it in portion of the program, isn't it, Fancy?
Yeah, when you talk about Southern, oh, honey, we pay in the summer. Come on. We get cooked.
Yeah, and who, right, and who am I kidding? You know, I was in Southeast Georgia last week, and I got burnt. I was in the Southeast Georgia sun for 4 hours, and I got burnt.
I've seen your nose. I know. But it was a lovely. I love what's happening here. I want to make a note that yesterday, you know, I'm a follower of Doonesbury, and yesterday he worked Occupy into the strip. And this is where it's going to happen. It's going to happen with a mention from Doonesbury, and it's going to happen with a.
Well, and the other side of this, and this is proof of more of that fear factor, I think, Fancy. I think it was a couple of nights ago that our buddy Andy excoriated NPR for the way it's responded to Occupy. Well, I don't know if Andy's seen this story or not, or if anybody else has, but if you ever needed a reason to sort of hold back that quarterly pledge, this is it. There's a woman named Lisa Simone, and she produced and hosted a show about opera. It was, oddly enough, called World of Opera.
So far, so good.
Yeah. Now, she's from North Carolina or somewhere. It's run or produced by WDAV, a music and arts station in Davidson, North Carolina. The program itself is distributed by NPR. Lisa Simone doesn't work for WDAV or NPR. She's a freelancer. So it came to the attention of NPR, probably via Fox or one of those, you know, filthy right-wing outlets, that Ms. Simone had visited Freedom Plaza in Washington, D.C., and the October 2011 encampment. Once NPR learned of this, now, she wasn't, let's be straight, Fancy, she wasn't covering it. She wasn't going there in any official capacity whatsoever. And within hours of NPR learning about it, they had leaned on WDAV, and WDAV had put the kibosh on her.
Suspended the show.
Yeah, no, but it just got rid of her. I mean, she was a little stunned. She said, "What are they afraid of? That I'm going to work in an Occupy comment in the middle of a story about Madam Butterfly?"
Yeah.
They were concerned with her ethics.
Oh, okay. I changed the subject again, but
I find that a little bit of that tells me everything I need to know about the for-profit media, whom I now. In whom I now include NPR.
You know, and let's not wipe with too broad a brush. That was what, North Carolina or South Carolina?
Well, it was North Carolina and then nationally NPR. It was national NPR that took action. They leaned on the North Carolina. It's because the show is distributed by NPR. So NPR just said, be done with thee.
Now, I want to comment on Herman Cain's matter of choice. And what we're failing to notice here is that one does have a choice of how they will present themselves in public. And so what gays are offered is act straight and you'll be okay. And how many of us know lovely people who have acted straight. And this, you know, they've married, they've had children, and this doesn't mean that they don't love their spouses and their kids, et cetera, et cetera. But the choice is not who you are, but how you present yourself. No disagreement on that one?
No, I mean, it's the closet or ignominy, right?
Now, little comment, that the head of the Southern Baptist Conference from Dallas, and frankly, I haven't been around Southern Camp.
He's not even the head. That's no. That's just he's an influential SoBapCon. You're talking about Reverend Jeffress?
Yes. Well, I'm from Criswell's day. I can certainly talk about Criswell, but I had never seen this little dude before. And is that just a big old pansy or what?
Said in the most loving way possible. Yeah, I got emails saying that he was setting off more than one Gator scope.
Lord.
But then again, I mean, you've been with us long enough. You remember the story of the Southern Baptist minister from Montgomery, Alabama, whose wife went on vacation, and they came back and found him dead.
He was in the diving suit.
Yeah, all done up in rubber with a couple of marital aids in a couple of places.
Up his ass, yes.
You just will not let me be circumspect now, will you, Fancy?
Lord.
I mean, we made a song about that.
What was it? I was...
John Fox made a song about that. I wrote the lyric.
Well, about the name of Rick Perry's...
ranch?
Yeah.
Hunting camp?
That's not going to disturb his followers in the slightest. They'll find it quite amusing.
No, I found one jackass who was offering, and he was supposedly a progressive who was offering reasons why we shouldn't be concerned about that, because that's actually an old English nautical term meaning No, I'm not kidding.
But, you know,
there's a big difference between that and the book about the Narcissus, okay? I mean, there just is. I mean, but no, you're right. It's not going to bother his followers. And I don't think he was ever counting on getting too much of the black vote in the first place, was he?
Yeah, I'm thinking he's got followers who call a spade, pardon that one. But that's not going to disturb them in the slightest.
No, heck no. I mean, you know, if you ask a Rick Perry follower, well, that ain't no different than Kinky Friedman. Right? Sadly?
Ain't no different than Kinky Friedman.
You know, because Kinky's got a ranch and
I know Kinky.
Yeah, and I mean, what's the name? What's the name of his band, Kinky Friedman and the Texas Jew Boys?
And the Texas Jew Boys, yeah. And, but this was Kinky's decision.
Right.
And incidentally, but good word for Kinky, talk about dovetailing back into another thought. When I was a kid, I used to go to camp. His mother and dad owned the camp, the summer camp down in Gurville and Echo Hill. Some of his books he'll talk about back at Echo Hill. And he inherited part of that camp, which he turned into a dog and cat rescue.
Yes.
And down on the dog and cat rescue, I forget their names, but one of the ladies he has there is Miss So-and-so, and she's the charm school lady. She teaches the animals to be pleasant, so they'll be adopted. And then he has Miss So-and-so, who's the beautician, who gets them all just combed and curried and washed and beautiful so that they can go out and become beloved pets. And yay for Kinky on that one.
Yeah.
Good for him. But I would, yeah. I'm grasshoppering here from thought to thought. I'm going to go away and just know that Occupy is doing well down here at the north end of the Great Sonoran Desert. But it's a very pleasant, I will say, I asked somebody and I said, now, are the civil police in the area? And I said, you know, you get in any trouble, they let me sleep at night. And one of the guys said, well, what we do is when it comes time to close the park, Pastor Bob takes everybody who wants to out on the sidewalk and where he preaches. And it's okay to stand on the sidewalk and listen to church. And those who choose to stay in, and they're not arresting, they're just citing. So those who choose to accept citations stay in the park, and they get cited, and then the police leave, and then they settle down for the night. So praise the Lord for Brother Bob, who is certainly helping people to proceed in a reasonable way. And bless the officers because nobody's provoking anybody. We're pretty much a very reasonable town. And as far as I know, a fist has not been thrown in any of this.
And by and large, that's been one of the great outcomes of this, is that they have managed to stop all that or prevent it. And that can't be the importance of that can't be overstated, because at the first hint of violence, they will crush it like bugs underfoot. Fancy, it's awful good talking to you, dear.
Hey, best to everybody, and hi to the chat room.
All right, we'll talk soon. Bye now. Calling from sunny Tucson, that's our pal Fancy. And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Hey, Cossack, what's happening, man?
Oh, not much. So, yeah, people are wondering about the whole Occupy movement. They don't understand and so forth and so on. It's called an uprising. Do you understand that?
Oh, maybe we ought to be careful about calling it an uprising, because that's that's another reason for them to come in. Well, it's probably anti-American, you know, that kind of stuff.
Well, it's called the people are revolting. You know.
Gee, and I thought the 1% were revolting. Sorry.
Well, I agree. But I mean, you know, the people are starting to stand up. It's not funny, Bob.
No, and not at all.
And we're trying to get that across to the insular 1%, and actually more like the 0.1%, who have grown insanely wealthy over the last 30 years.
Yeah, one of the things that the 1%, and actually it is the 0.1%, one of the things that they don't have, that they have going against them, is the fact that there's only about 400 families.
Yeah.
That doesn't, yeah, I mean, that's a pretty short list.
Yes, it is. Well, that's what I'm trying to get across, is that, you know, we should all thank God that it's nonviolent. As you say, at the first hint of violence, we'll be, you know, the Occupy movement will be crushed. But,
out of hand.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, you were talking about the, you know, they want it all class. That's the 0.1%. It's like the old story about a man sitting there looking out over this huge expanse of land, and he's saying, one day all this will be mine. You want it all. No, I just want all the land adjoining mine.
Exactly. We had one of those people in the history of the area who, in the area where I grew up. Don't want to own all everything. Just want to own all the land that touches mine.
Exactly. And when you think of that, then you realize, yes, he does want it all.
And, you know, I wish we had just a little bit more volunteerism, for lack of a better term, because I'm no artistic designer, but they want it all bumper sticker, you know, maybe put 99% colon, they want it all.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be awesome to see that just showing up on cars, guitar cases, what have you, backpacks? Yeah. Because it's true. Time after time after time, Cossack, we see concrete examples that it is absolutely true. And there's no getting around it.
You know, and, you know, it's like, especially through the for-profit media, you are fed a particular diet as...
Yeah, it's the mushroom diet.
Yeah.
Keep you in the dark and feed you nothing but...
Exactly. I mean, for example, Brother Albert, much as I love him, all right, he was just repeating to you the domestic misinformation that we have been fed for 30 years about Libya. Yeah.
Oh, I'm not going to sit here and offer, you know, I come here not to praise Gaddafi, but to bury him.
Right.
He was not a good man.
Well, all things considered, I mean,
you know, Libya was a failed state when he took it over by coup, because when there was a kingdom of Libya, the king of Libya never really was able to get the people of Libya to conceptualize themselves as citizens of a country versus members of a tribe.
Correct.
And that is not a criticism of tribalism.
No.
It is moreover an observation of the fact that cookie cutter one size fits all political solutions, whether they be communism or whatever we're calling what we do.
Right.
Ain't necessarily right for another culture. I mean, you know, it's nothing to hear, and you hear it any political discussion, for instance, of India. It's the world's largest democracy. Well, you know, great. Here's your Laurel and Hardy handshake and a certificate suitable for framing. If you ever get a hovel you can hang it in, you poor, starving human being. Because they've got them by the hundreds of millions, starving human beings. Oh, but it's a democracy.
Correct.
You know, I'm at a place in my life where I'm not going to bite on that crap anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, Lindsey Graham cracker. Oh, we need to bring them democracy.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you know what Tripoli needs? Starbucks.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole point. That's what I was trying to say earlier. Is failed state. Well, it was at the top of the states in Africa. It, you know, had the most educated people per hundred. Those women were educated.
Many of the same things that were true of Saddam Hussein's Iraq. Women were free to come and go as they pleased. They entered professional life. In fact, you know, remember under Hussein's Iraq, certain ancient, among the most ancient Christian sects, not only were tolerated and survived, but thrived.
Correct.
And that's all gone now. Because we're going to give democracy to Iraq.
Exactly. And, you know, that's...
You know, what does democracy mean to a corpse?
Not a whole hell of a lot. Yeah, it's like I was trying to say, people forget that there's a whole hell of a lot of reason to believe that Libya had nothing to do with Lockerbie. People forget that just about 6 months before Lockerbie, we had shot an Iranian domestic airliner out of the air, killing all 243 people.
True.
It's much more likely that the Iranians were behind it than the Libyans. The Libyans had their own problems.
But there's also, if you consider the dossier on Muammar Gaddafi,
he did
have a megalomaniacal bent.
Oh yeah.
And as such, you know, he saw himself as the savior of the Arabs, or
right.
the savior of the Muslim world, depending on which précis you're reading.
Right.
And it's arguable that there could have been a soupçon of revenge. You know, well, you know, it is incumbent upon me as the leader of the yada yada, and I'll take care of it.
True, but the thing is, like I said, the likelihood is that Iran was actually behind the bombing. Because, I mean, you know, we just blew 243 of their civilians out of the air for no goddamn good reason. As a matter of fact, we gave the captain an award when he came back.
Well, of course we did.
Yeah.
I'm not doubting. It's just Jesus. That's the way it works out. Cossack, I gotta roll along, brother. I wanna make sure that everybody gets in who hung on for so long.
All right.
And I appreciate you hanging on for so long.
No problem.
All right, take care.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
From North Florida, that's the Cossack. Hey, welcome to the program.
All right. Hey.
Hey, Juanita?
No. Yeah.
Okay, would you, yeah, please.
From North Florida, that's the Cossack. Yeah, you got the delay, so.
Yeah, I confuse myself when I hear myself.
Yeah, I wanted to say a little bit about the animal situation. You know, they had a hearing in Congress a while back, the Republicans did, about, I think it was a business down here, you know, because we have a big problem, and especially down in the Everglades, with people getting rid of their pythons and so forth.
Right, the breeding.
They actually eat, they can swallow an alligator, so. And they were trying to get some kind of the ordinance against that. And they actually had a guy that raises that kind of animals, and he said, oh, you'd be taking away the jobs. And the Republicans were all for him.
Oh, God, I remember that.
Remember? But you know what, Bob?
Another liberal jobs-killing bill.
Yeah. Cassie was talking about that, about, you know, Cheney and his hunting and all. And I'm not saying he did, but I wouldn't be surprised. But, you know, they do take these animals like that, and they put them in hunting, so-called hunting preserves. And
oh, yes, they do.
People go out and hunt for them, just like the birds.
Yeah, if you want to blast an elephant, but you don't want to go all the way to Africa where it's very hard to do anyway, you know, there's some preserve in Texas or Florida or Ohio or God knows where they've got some tired old, worn out, can barely move circus elephant that they got for cheap, and they'll drive J.P. Gottrocks III out with a big old elephant gun. And let him blow away an elephant that's as likely to come up to him looking for a snack and to pet him on the head with its trunk as it is to do anything else. And then J.P. Gottrocks III turns around and goes back and feels like the great white hunter.
Oh yeah, and
you all can call me Buona.
But. Even Cheney, doesn't he likes to hunt the human animals, don't he?
Only if he can shoot them in the face.
Do you think that was an accident?
Oh, hell no. No, I really don't.
the guy was a politician, and I heard...
No, I don't think it was an accident. I think it was a function of something that's pretty typical, and that is liquored up hunting. Because if you recall the timeline to that, Juanita, it took forever before Cheney was even let anywhere near any. You know, he had to sober up. And they also had to get rid of the, what, the ambassador to Switzerland or something? You know, his little Swiss miss?
I didn't know about that.
Oh, I remember it well. I think Luke from East Tennessee and I had an extended conversation about that.
But that's one of my big bugaboos is about how animals are treated. And Fancy was talking about the dogs and dogs and cats and all. And they have things so twisted, Bob. These laws, I mean, like down here, they make it almost impossible for you to get any kind of, like to get spaying and stuff like that. It took me a long time to get these little animals that took up here with me to get them fixed. And, you know, it costs some places, it costs like $250 for one cat.
Wow.
And the Humane Society is so far behind, you know, till mine were having kittens while I was waiting on them. But anyway, but then they want to get you in trouble about it. And they have all these stray animals, and they, to me, there should be some kind of control about that, too, about people that get animals, if they're not going to be breeders, then real, real, real breeders, humane breeders, then it should be the law that everybody has to have their animals spayed. And because there's just too many stray animals. Every once in a while, the dog pound, they collect all the dogs that are stray out here. And, you know, people still have them, then you're supposed to keep them contained.
Oh, look, we've got a couple of absolutely adorable Labrador retrievers. They don't belong to us. One of them's black and one of them's chocolate. And they are just exquisite boys.
Yeah.
And they're bonded with us. And so didn't really have any choice in the matter. They attach themselves to us, so we buy dog food and feed them.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't help it, you know. And that's me. If I get my, right now, well, I just lost one little kitty cat the other day.
Break your heart.
Yeah. And anyway, I've got five now left. And I finally got them all fixed. And one vet had told me I had two males. And they ended up, they were female because when I took them to SPCA, they were feeling around and said, no, they're, you know, they're females. And I, you know, because it's cheaper to get a male fixed. So I was going to get two at one time. And it was, they were both females.
We've got one incredibly blonde Siamese cat that runs around the house.
Oh, yeah.
And she's just beautiful and adorable.
Yeah.
And just talks, walks around the house, wow, wow, mom. Yeah, she calls Agnes, mom. It's precious. Juanita, it's all.
I just want to tell you one thing. We got one cat that coos like a dove. I swear. You know how doves sound?
Yeah, well, and this Siamese chirps too.
Okay. And she speaks for all the others.
Juanita, have a lovely evening, dear.
You too.
Bye now. And welcome to the program.
Good evening. How you doing?
Hey, Jim. How are you?
Well, for that King Idris that Gaddafi overthrew. I think it was King Idris, wasn't it?
That sounds right. And of course, the Italians had their hands in the affairs of Libyan state for a long time too. That can't be overlooked.
Yep, it was absolutely. Well, Gaddafi's ways have caught up with him, and he is basically tossed into the dustbin of history, and so be it. And we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and like I said, this is the hard part.
Yeah, and my compliments on you. I'm playing a show tune from South Pacific, sung by Mitzi Gaynor as Incidentally Forbush.
Well, you know, a lot of people don't remember, Jim, that for its time, South Pacific was considered somewhat out there, somewhat risky. There was Rodgers and Hammerstein really were on eggshells.
Based on Tales of the South Pacific by James A. Mishner.
It was, but the way it was presented, there was a lot of misgiving about whether or not typically upwardly mobile, upscale white audiences would how they would respond to it.
I don't remember that.
I remember reading something about it a couple of years ago. I don't remember the particulars.
Well, listen, it was one of my favorite musicals, and I do know there was a problem with Juanita Hall, who played Bloody Mary, and they used somebody else's voice.
In the film?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But anyway, it was truly, yep. I mean, a chef-d'oeuvre by Rodgers and Hammerstein. I'm glad you played that. I really am. And,
well, when I heard Herman Cain talking about washing it off, the first thing that came into my head was going to wash that man right out of my hair.
Oh, he's just an idiot. I mean, good God in heaven, what does he know about being gay or straight? I mean, he looks like the kind who would probably, in his heterosexuality, jump on any female who crossed his path and, you know, that type of thing. And he is basically, he's simply a bigoted idiot. And as far as gay and straight is concerned, that's something that a person doesn't learn. It's something that is with them from I don't know what age, but the research and the scientific data on it, of course, indicate that it's not necessarily learned behavior, but it's an inherent type thing.
Right, and hence you get the nature of my frustration with Piers Morgan.
Well, I mean, that he really made an ass of himself on that interview and lost such an opportunity to put that idiot Herman Cain where, you know, in his place. But I guess he was too scared to offend his opinion, you know.
Well, but no, I think, Jim, I respectfully disagree a little bit, because the other thing is that he had the opportunity to have one of those at long last, sir, have you no decency moments, and just put paid to Herman Cain's candidacy once and for all.
That's what I was trying to tell you just a second ago.
But CNN has a vested interest in keeping the clowns coming out of the clown car in the circus. More clowns, not less clowns, is better business for the CNN infotainment model, if that makes any sense.
Well, I think if he would have put Herman Cain in his place, it would probably have brought them an even greater audience share to see that guy brought down, to be honest with you.
Oh, and by the way, Juanita just reminded me, Jim, we got to get out of here kind of quick, but she just reminded me what it was about South Pacific that was sort of squirmy and nerve-wracking for Rodgers and Hammerstein. It was the presence of one particular song, and that song was You've Got to Be Carefully Taught.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Because that was all about bigotry,
race, and things like that. Yeah,
and it was premiering at a time when the civil rights movement was beginning to become more than just something on the verges of the American consciousness, and it did cause rather of a stir.
That was about John Kerr or Lieutenant Cable, and his liaison was the daughter of Bloody Mary.
Right. I got to get out of here, Jim, but thank you very much. I do appreciate it.
Out here.
All right, take care. Bye now. It's our good buddy, Jim. And it is time to go. Thanks to everybody who makes all this happen. Thank you for the one contribution that came in this evening. One contribution when is badly needed. And I thank you. We all thank you. Thanks for all the volunteers who make all of this happen, from Lottie and Sparky in the chat room, to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, to our blogger, Texas Betsy, Reverbo, my spiritual advisor and head writer, David in Tennessee, John Fox, and Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Go there, become a member, and become a part of the solution for the Appalachian apocalypse. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.